This is Jerry DiPiano, and you are listening or watching the Love Mia Vita podcast. We're here with Dr. Toyin Fadiyibi. And Dr. Fadiyibi, please introduce yourself and the topic today, which is SAMHSA's 8 Dimensions of Wellness, Part 2.
Part 2. Yes. Thank you so much again for having me, Jerry. It's always fun being with you. So I am Toyin Fadiyibi. I'm a public health pharmacist. I'm also in the public service here in the city of Philadelphia, serving some of our most vulnerable populations. I'm not sure how I introduced myself the first time, so it might be a little different, but it's still me. And I'm just glad to be here. I love all things mental health, public health, and just the healthcare system. And also I love empowering women as well. So I do a little bit and a lot of that at different parts of my life. And I love the opportunity anytime I get to share around well-being and wellness, which is the conversation that we're continuing today. So in our first part, we tackled 4 of the 8 dimensions of wellness. And I'm just going to restate SAMHSA. Jerry, would you like me to
restate
that? So SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration organization. Mouthful completely. But I would say I have an easier summary. They're pretty much the federal government agency that is responsible to set policy agenda across the country for all things mental health and substance use. And so they always have kind of the framework that they put out for other organizations in the country to adopt, to find ways to make practical for their populations. But they really have done a great job, in my opinion, with developing this framework of wellness a few years ago. And I just love sharing about it. I think it gives a really comprehensive way of looking at well-being, and it gives us practical tools to be able to utilize to get there, to get to well-being.
And although SAMHSA deals with substance abuse disorder, this is not solely for individuals who are in recovery or who may be in the process of recovering. This is for the general population. There's applicability to many different populations. And quite frankly, the last time we had our podcast, we talked about some of our favorite ways to tackle the four of the 8 dimensions of wellness. So really excited to dive in. And which one shall we dive into first?
Yeah. So before we dive in, I just really think your call out just now was perfect. Because after describing them the way that I did, we certainly want to make sure folks don't go in there thinking, oh, doesn't apply to me, but totally does. So I wanted to echo that again, to say that I use this personally. I use it with my teams at work. I use it with interns in order to help them develop this framework. So come into it certainly with an open mind. Last time, we tackled emotional wellness, financial wellness, spiritual wellness, and intellectual wellness. Those were the 4 we tackled. And so we have 4 left. I'm going to let you pick, Jerry. I'm going to name them for you. So we have social, environmental, physical, and occupational wellness left. So want to go with an order today, or we want to just go with it?
Let's go with social.
Okay. So social wellness, as you know, the name implies a little bit there, has to do with outing, connecting with people. I would say the action words I want you to think about today when you hear social wellness, don't just think going out for drinks with friends. Think connection and belonging. And so I really think that exploring how to increase your social wellness using those keywords is more important than coming up with social activities to do. And so when you think of connection, right, like you might go to drinks with a friend and you feel no connection or sense of belonging. And I mean, I know I've been there sometimes outside trying to be more social. And I'm like out there thinking, I think I was better off on the phone with another friend on my bed. And again, some would say that's not being social because you're not out there connecting. But It's about a connection. So whatever helps in developing a sense of connection and feeling that genuine sense of belonging in relationships that way, I think that's the target point for social wellness. Another thing I want to highlight around social wellness is, especially women, I think we love like having a group of girlfriends and go-tos. These are my inner circle. We got all kinds of terms for them, BFFs and stuff. And I don't feel like it changes as we grow older either, because I have a 9-year-old who's like all about friends and groups and this one over here and that one over there and that one stopped doing this and that. And in my age too, I hear people sometimes, oh, I went to vacation with this group of friends and these are my friends from here. And so I think just kind of putting it down and letting it know that it's okay to have different levels of friends, meaning you can have acquaintances who you know just a little bit, and you can still develop good relationships with some level of connection with those folks. They don't have to be in on what's boiling in your heart, right? So I think it's okay. And I've had to say that even to myself, right? Like, every friend is there for a reason. Different connections that I have are for different reasons. Like, no one person, even a spouse, can fill every single possible relationship need that we have, which again, I think is why we need spiritual wellness and grounding so that we're not seeking from humans what God gives us, right? And so just wanted to put that in there because, again, I think one of the things we established in the first part of this conversation was that they're all connected and they all connect so well together. In fact, you want to think of ways to make your wellness domains speak to each other. So what that looks like, as an example, I just referenced spiritual wellness. So if I wanted to cultivate more social wellness, maybe it means that I set out to build more tangible, meaningful connections with some friends from my local, maybe church community that I've not been doing a good job reaching out to. And I'm like, okay, that builds both, right? Because we're practicing the same faith. We can maybe pray together, or we can encourage together. But now I'm also trying to establish a better connection personally in our interactions, right? And that also probably increased the likelihood of fostering social wellness because you have that shared value system. So I'll stop there for social wellness. I think those are the action terms I would say to really hold on to is build, taking time to dig into relationships and begin building relationships that foster that sense of connection and belonging.
So when I think about these types of connections, social connections, I tend to compartmentalize them, but oftentimes they overlap, as you described. And I think about the frictionless relationships that I have, because the more friction, the less you feel connected. Can you speak to that?
I don't know that I find that to be the case all the time. I find sometimes that greater intimacy actually can bring more friction because you're digging deeper and getting to the hard stuff. I think I'm easy, or maybe that's just a personality difference thing, but for me, like, across, and I am a little bit of I love like assessments, leadership assessments. I've done all of them. Most of them. I'm sure there's some I haven't found yet, but I literally. And for all of them, it's always something around like you love depth, you love like deep, meaningful relationships. And so when things stay too surfacey too long, but it's just like, how's the weather? After a while, I'm just like, but how are you? Like, how's life really? Like, what do you think about that? Stimulate, right? But I think when it's just how is weather, like, what are we fighting about? I guess maybe global warming, we could fight about that. But like, my point is that I actually think the opposite for the most part, that when you go deeper in relationships and really get to the part of connection, sometimes is where friction, now you're more forgiving of friction as time goes on, because now there's vested care and love in the relationship, maybe even. But yeah, that's my take on that.
Yeah. So healthy debate is always something that I have engaged in with people that I'm comfortable with. So making that connection when I have deep connections with individuals, I know they'll forgive me for all the terrible things that I'm saying.
Absolutely.
We disagree. It's okay to disagree. We hug at the end of the night. You know, we'll just, and we're still friends, you know, tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that. So I guess when I'm speaking about friction, it's feeling comfortable with the friction. Not being unsettled by the friction. And that's where you feel that the connection becomes, the social connection becomes deeper.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely. And I think that the last part that I would tag on to the social piece is feeling that you have a healthy support system.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of times, right, like, again, as you said earlier, this isn't just for folks in recovery or hoping for recovery. It's a framework for well-being of all Americans. But that support system is huge. So if all you have are the surface level acquaintances, when things get rough, it might be a challenge.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting when you think about folks as they mature. So if they leave their careers, if they've had a career and most of their connections were career connections, and then they transition from their career to retirement, if they have no other connections, whether they are with, you know, a house of worship or with, you know, maybe a gardening group or some other affiliation, it becomes very lonely. And that's why we tend to see older individuals who are exiting some of their professional life find communities where they can re-engage with individuals and find hobbies and work on those types of relationships, because otherwise they feel lost.
You know what I just also thought about? I have wondered lately, as I've looked at some of the numbers, some suicide numbers, and hearing stories also about like the older populations also, you know, navigating suicide and all that. And I think you just hit the nail on the head at some of those root causes. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying it's all it is, but certainly loneliness contributes, you know. And, you know, again, I've known someone, at least personally, and heard of others who are not too many degrees away, who have left the earth that way. And so definitely have a lot of empathy for that. So I know it's not one dimensional, because I think it's important to clarify that, right? But I do think that lack of support system is sometimes a factor. And the deep loneliness, where they could even be in a room, right, with family, because that's the other piece of this is family for some, and this is actually also part of social, for some people, family is not a safe place of belonging, connection, and support. And so that's a challenge if that's what you're surrounded by as that older person. And so for some people, family is toxic and they need to find that social wellness outside of family. And that's hard.
Yeah. So I always say you're born into a family, that's your biology. And then
you get to choose,
accept the family, and you get to choose those that become your family, even if you don't share the same DNA.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. I think that's a perfect, little tie. We can tie the bow on the social wellness with that. Yeah. That was perfect. And then we can jump on, let's see, what's a smooth segue here. Let's jump on occupational, because I think we've talked a little bit about work connections, work relationships, and all that. So occupational wellness is around personal satisfaction, enrichment, and kind of from your work. And again, I think one thing I would clarify up front, for me at least, when I think of work, I don't just think of 9 to 5. I think any way that I contribute to the world. And for me, that's in a variety of ways. So all of it, like finding personal satisfaction and enrichment from that contribution. And so if one finds themselves in a scenario where maybe the 9-to-5 is no longer providing satisfaction and enrichments. And the distance between getting from there to the next where you might pursue that is not clear, like it's not like something is laid out, then what do? Do you just forego this wellness part because, well, it's just not my lot at the moment? Or do you think creatively and say, all right, what other ways can I use my other skills and talents to contribute to the world and find enrichment and satisfaction in that way? So that while maybe you're navigating and figuring out what you want to do next, you're not entirely depleted, speaking of occupational wellness. But I think really making effort to build relationships in the place of work is important. And so whatever that looks like for me, I was never a big after hour, look, I can't even think of the actual term for it. What do they call those?
So when you build these relationships outside mm-hmm. of work, that with your workmates, there was a show on TV years ago, it was called Ally McBeal. And they would go, and these young people would head out after work and they would have drinks and they would dance and so forth. And yes.
Yeah, that.
That.
Yeah. I was never big on that. Like I can literally count how many I've been in my 15 plus years in the workforce overall. However, I have had lunches with coworkers outside of work. I have had, you know, dedicated times of lunch with coworkers at work. I have a lot of water cooler conversations that are intentionally building connection, right? Not just, oh yeah, you know, how's that today? But I try to remember whose child is doing what. And they the same as well, right? And I remember, oh, you have a 13-year-old. Tell me three pieces of advice, please. I do that often. I ask for parenting advice when I identify someone who's steps ahead of me. I'm like, okay, what did you do that worked and what should I not be doing right now, right? And so find the way that feels true to you in nurturing and cultivating relationships at work. And again, remember, this is not just about work 9-to-5 as you may traditionally think, but your career broadly. For me personally, one of the ways I also over the years have grown in my personal satisfaction and enrichment around this occupationally is conferences. So I do get to do some level of conferencing where I not only go as an attendee, but I also get to share and present. Sometimes it's something like this, like I've led a student burnout talk at a pharmacy conference for pharmacy students. Or I could be disseminating data and research of something I did at the job. And so it's variety, but for me, I love the connecting. I love the buzz in a conference. I love sitting in and listening to people I've never met before. I was just at a conference, 2 weeks ago in New Orleans. And one of the keynote speakers was like a magician. You might even know him, but he was a magician, used to be in the NFL, had the most riveting story. Best keynote I've ever heard in my life, hands down, like from a distance. But I think that's another way you can think about it. Like, okay, maybe I need to step out of my day-to-day routine and shake things up a little bit. I need to go to different circles and sub-circles of my career types, right? And the different groups of people. And just thinking of how you can freshen, like, what's the word I'm going for here? How you can kind of spice things up a little bit, switch things up a little bit. Because that helps. Breaking up that mundane routine is half the battle, I would say. I have found, at least. I have found for occupational wellness.
So it is about finding meaning and purpose in what you do on a day-to-day basis. And if you can't find meaning and purpose in what you do on a day-to-day basis in your occupation, I believe what, at least for me, what I'm tend to do, because I can't always build relationships as a CEO with people who
work
for me, because it may be considered favoritism or possibly harassment or something along those lines. So I have to be careful, even though I really like the people that work with me. Yeah. It may be a little challenging from a human resources perspective to do that. So
right.
What I'm trying to do is find things, find relationships, find meaning in what I would consider tangential to my occupation. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a very quick but true story. So years ago, working in the pharmaceutical industry and, you know, in a big company, multinational mm-hmm. company, it was hard to really build those relationships. So what I ended up doing was I ended up volunteering at St. Francis Hospital Emergency Room in Trenton, New Jersey. And I dragged my husband there on weekends. I did more of the hands-on kinds of things in the ER. And my husband was a patient counselor, if you will. He wasn't a great patient counselor, but I give him high marks because he loved me. And
I was going to say, great guy for coming along for the
ride. He is a great guy. But the bottom line is, it was a way to build relationships that were sort of tangential to my occupation, but also helped me to think about why I do what I do. So it gave me, you know, it really fulfilled me in a way that, in spite of the fact that I loved what I did on a day-to-day basis, it really brought back home, why am I working in the field of drug development? And it was because ultimately, it was that person who came to the ER that needed some sort of medicine that we developed.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
So it, mm-hmm. it gave me more meaning and purpose for what I do every single day.
I love that.
Yeah, it's you can find these things. I talked to a friend that does volunteer work for Ronald McDonald
mm-hmm.
House.
Mm-hmm. But I was just going to say that connects. Yeah, but that connects perfectly with spiritual wellness. One of the elements of spiritual wellness is around volunteering, thinking of others higher than yourselves, or at least maybe not higher. You know what I mean? Like factoring in others' needs and volunteering. And so imagine tagging those two along now, it's even more powerful. Because for you, it was connected to your occupation, but it was tapping into like a feeling of meaning and groundedness, right?
Yes.
But no, that was so good that you brought that up. I would say to that CEO, we assume it's not you, that they can build some occupational wellness also. So in addition to like conferences and staying stimulated that way, but they can find other CEO groups where they can create alliances. And I know they exist, like there's different kind of cohorts that exist, but that would be a place, for example, for that person where they're facing the same challenges, maybe even in the same field.
Because it can get kind of lonely.
Yeah,
so you,
sure.
you definitely, so getting back to social and the interdigitation of the social with the occupational, mm-hmm. if you're in a role where you feel like you're the lone ranger, it's great to be able to find those organizations where there are others like you, or you can learn from them, or you can commiserate with them about
Absolutely.
Your challenges every day.
Or all of the above.
Yes.
Yeah, for certain. Yeah. Do you want to expound on anything else for occupational?
I don't, think so. I think that, you know, the bottom line for me, at least, is finding meaning and purpose in what I do. And I happen to love what I do because I do find a lot of meaning and purpose, and it does tie into all of the other areas, social and spiritual. Not so much the financial, but it definitely, because there's a lot of investment that goes into healthcare.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. This is a little bit of a trick question. So my keywords around the occupational were satisfaction and enrichment, and meaning and purpose certainly feeds in there somewhat. Do you think you can find meaning and purpose in your occupation, in your work, your career, and still lack satisfaction?
Yes. I do. Been. And I'm never set because I'm never satisfied with the progress that we make, because there's always more to be done. There are more healthcare challenges that we need to overcome. There are more folks that need access to healthcare. There's more equity that is mm-hmm. important to us. There's
yep.
more need for diversity. So I'm never satisfied.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah. All right. That was it. You were well graded on the test. You did good.
Thank you. I passed.
Yeah, I think environmental will be another good one to segue, and then we can end with the physical. For the environmental, they talk about occupying pleasant and stimulating environments that support your well-being. And so I am a HGTV lover. I love HGTV. I love the shows. I don't get as much time as I used to like binge on it, but I could if I get the luxury of a house to myself and time for TV without guilt. HGTV would be where I go probably. And so I have, adopted different things from them over the years. And like even this study that I'm in, my personal study in my home here, like I revamped it like a year ago because I was like, we need to switch it up. I'm gonna keep the paint color. I love the paint color, but like I wanna change my color scheme. I want new chairs. And my husband's like, yeah, let's do it. You can see there on the wall, these are paintings that I did, all three of them, the one there and the yellow one. At like, painting with the twist and all those things. Because again, for me personally, one of my ways of cultivating wellness is painting and habits, like your hobbies, I should say, your hobbies. And so for me, when I'm in this space, I am stimulated, I am inspired, and I'm looking out the window and it's trees there, and it's the lighting is great. So what spaces exist in your life? And it may not be your study for you, it may be your bedroom. And how can you enhance that space to foster well-being? Now, I would say, I think it's the inside, right? Like if the inside is all knotted up and chaotic, I don't know that being in a Zen space or in a perfectly beautiful space fixes that. However, that external space can position you to be in a place where you can address the inner things that may be plaguing or bothering you. But overall, I really think that changing your scenery also helps. So for me, sometimes when I want a change of scenery, I find a cafe I've never been. I go look up. I love road trips. I might go somewhere just to work, even if it's for work or to read something that I have to read. If I have to read, I don't know, a 30-page report that'll take me maybe 2 hours to really go through, I can just sit here and read it on the TV, on the laptop, or maybe I can print it and take it with me to a place that I want to be in. And all of a sudden, what I'm reading feels better because I'm more relaxed and in a pleasantly feeling space. So I think it's often undermined. Also, things like clutter, right? We may not think, oh, clutter is no big deal. What's that got to do? Let me do my work. Put your computer on top of the pile. But I think really taking moments, all of those things matter because it's all being taken in with our senses, which is also what we're using to process what we want to process. So yeah, that's, I would say, my initial take on environmental wellness. And I have found it really, really impactful. When I've really taken time to strengthen that area, it is very impactful to my well-being.
Yeah, and your physical space means that you can actually function. I always use the metaphor of your house needs to be in order. And I don't, I you can take that literally or you can take that metaphorically. And what I mean by that is if you're in a space that creates stress for you, it could be your office is creating stress for you because you have deadlines, et cetera. Perhaps you take it outside. I also am a big believer in decluttering because if you are surrounded by stuff, whatever that stuff is, papers or belongings that are not useful to you, it can create a sense of stress and anxiety. So what I like to do, I'm a big believer in decluttering.
Yes.
Sometimes to my family's dismay because you can't leave
Oh.
things around for a long time without Jerry moving them
Without
or
it being in the
throwing them out.
trash.
Yes, they're in the trash. But I think that's my take on the environment is it is really important to your overall well-being, especially to your sense of anxiety, right? Because it at least it makes me very anxious when there is a lot that is going on around me. And when I say that, I mean it's stuff piled up, things that aren't attractive. I
I
like
can
the sun,
feel
I
the
like the
energy
water.
just talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the sun. I like the water. I like artwork. So I tend to want to see beautiful cities that I either have visited or might want to visit someday.
I think the last element of environmental wellness has to do with like going green, right? Which has been a big topic in the past several years now. I think we mentioned global warming casually earlier, but just thinking of the different ways that we can contribute positively to our physical environment as well, right? Whether it's recycling, whether it's, you know, using products that are non-toxic, that's also captured within SAMHSA's description of environmental wellness. And, you know, some people are, some are better with that than others in terms of like their dedication to like making sure they recycle and making sure they don't use plastic and making sure it's toxic free this and toxic free that. But whatever we do in that direction is also contributing to environmental wellness as well. And then the last, and not certainly not the least, is the physical. And of course, we are in these bodies and it's the vehicle for everything else, right? Whether spiritual, right? Like you need your heart in tune for that. Whether financial, you need your eyes, maybe you can do without your eyes, but your hands, I don't know. You need something in your body to navigate debts and money and retirement, your mind for sure. Social, you need to be able to get to where you're being social or have a conversation. So, and I can go on, but I think you guys get the point that the physical piece is really important. It's the vehicle by which all the other ones kind of have to facilitate all their parts, right? So for physical, I think the physical activity, well, when I said physical wellness, we probably all thought eating better and exercising. I think those are standards. So I'm not even going to spend time with that. What they say, eat your rainbows, move your body, right? And we can go in all kinds of details about that. But I wanted to highlight two things that may not typically come to mind when you hear physical wellness, which is sleep, so sleep hygiene, as well as preventive health. So going to the doctors annually or more frequently as required, making sure they're checking labs or whatever you're doing, the different screenings that are needed at your different age milestones. When if I had quizzed someone who never heard this framework of physical wellness, you know, they probably wouldn't have mentioned that, you know, but it's something to definitely keep in mind as important, because oftentimes, especially in the field of public health, what gets the biggest bang for our buck, which is not the way the healthcare system is built, is actually primary prevention, which is like, let's not even let those things happen so we don't have to spend more fixing them and have more trouble fixing them. And so preventative things like this, like what I'm describing, are the things that get us there. So when the kids are on their vaccine schedule and the adults get the colonoscopy when they're supposed to, and the mom gets the breast cancer, you know, the mammogram at the right time, and all that good stuff is really, really important to our physical wellness. And then the sleep hygiene that I mentioned, I think in our culture today, a lot of us are, you know, involved in a lot, and sleep sometimes is the sacrifice. And I'm learning that it's probably the one thing that shouldn't be the sacrifice. Like your body could probably, we could all probably survive on one less sandwich. But I think when it comes to sleep, we get so much benefits from it. Regarding our sharpness in our occupation, right, and in our work, even regarding our being in tune in connections. So again, thinking about the social connection, like when you're not sleeping, like I'm trying to get to take a nap, right? But when we have that good rest, it helps in more ways than just, it's not just about feeling sleepy. It's we're not alert, we're not sharp. On our feet, we're not thinking quickly on our feet, we're not in the mood, our appetite is probably overstimulated, we think we're hungry, but we're really not, we just really need that sleep. And so just really prioritizing sleep and preventive medicine are the two I wanted to highlight, because I feel like there's a lot of talk already, a lot of talk in general about diet and exercise, but those are just as important. For sure.
Absolutely. We spend a lot of time on podcasts talking about sleep. We talk a lot about sleep in conjunction with stress, anxiety, eating disorders, and things of the the like, because we know that it impacts everything. And if you're, you know, if you're overstimulating because you're eating more, and then you're gaining weight, and you're stressed out, and you're gaining more weight, and then you're drinking more coffee, or you're consuming wine, thinking that it gets you into sleep, but it really just disturbs your sleep, then you've got a problem, and you need to address that, because it is a massive issue.
Yeah, and the cycle keeps going if one doesn't like pause, take a step back, and actually identify what the root cause is. That cycle you just described can't keep going on for a very long time until it leads to, you know, something disastrous potentially.
And we shouldn't oversimplify. One of the things that we hear a lot from our audience is, I have insomnia. And insomnia is sort of the catch-all phrase for, I'm having issues with my sleep. It might be insomnia, but it could be something else. So it's really important. You mentioned this earlier about your physical well-being. If you're having issues with sleep, you want to go and have those diagnostic tests. And by the way, you don't have to be mature, aka over the age
absolutely.
Of 50, to go and have those studies done, because we know that younger folks can develop sleep disorders, and there is hope and there is help. But you need to isolate specifically what is going on. And don't always rush to a prescription product, even though
absolutely.
They can help. The better thing to do is to uncover the reason for lack of sleep, and then to find the best way in which to address
it. So anybody listening, from a fellow struggler to another, there is hope, right?
Yes, there is hope.
I was just thinking about the impact in general. When we think of that connection between sleep hygiene is another thing I was thinking about. Many times, when folks go maybe to talk about their insomnia, what they think is insomnia, and the person is asking all these questions, and it lands all the way back at sleep hygiene. Nothing else. Just walk me through the 2 hours before bedtime. They might have dived into some of that around sleep hygiene. For me, I've had to practice some of that. Like, I'm not saying I've mastered it, but a particular one that I'm working on is around the phone. And not having the phone, because they've talked about the blue light being in our face a certain number of minutes before we close our eyes to go to sleep.
So we've covered four dimensions, the second four dimensions of the eight. And we've probably got those listening to us or watching this who are thinking, well, I'm hitting all eight. And if you are, kudos to you.
Yeah, email us. We want to know who you are.
We want to know who you are. We definitely want to know who you are. And we want to know how you were able to achieve that. But there is an opportunity to make progress. You've just heard Dr. Toyin Fadibi. Dr. Fadibi, thank you so much for being a guest on the Fem Pharma Love Mia Vita podcast. And for those of you that are listening in, remember to follow us on social media at fempharma.com, and please tune in to more of our podcasts, Love Mia Vita. Signing off, this is Jerry DiPiano with my guest, Dr. Toyin Fadibi. Bye.
Thank you for having me. Bye, guys.